Good morning. It's 8:06 on this Thursday. I'm KBCW's Grace Dorfler, filling in for Leslie Thatcher for today's local news hour. It's currently 63 degrees and sunny in Park City, 57 degrees and sunny in the Heber Valley. There is a red flag warning in effect. With more details about the weather for today, we have ABC4 meteorologist Seth Sanders.
Happy Thursday. I'm ABC4 weather forecaster Seth Sanders. Today's temperatures and conditions will be similar to what we saw yesterday. Park City will have a daytime high of 87, while the Heber Valley runs about 5 degrees warmer with a forecasted high of 92 degrees. We're looking at clear to mostly clear skies. A few clouds will roll in through the afternoon, but nothing that'll bring any precipitation. Overnight lows will drop into the low to mid 50s for the Wasatch back, and the cloud coverage will continue to increase overnight. And as we get into Friday, we expect a mix of sun and clouds and temperatures significantly cooler as a dry cold front moves through. Temperatures for your Friday will be in the upper 70s for Park City and the mid 80s for the Heber Valley. And the cooler temperatures with a mix of sun and clouds will hold on all the way through the weekend. Temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s for Park City with overnight lows in the 50s, while Heber City has overnight lows in the mid 40s and daytime highs in the mid 80s. By Tuesday and Wednesday, those temperatures will warm up to the upper 80s in Park City, while Heber City warms up to about 94 degrees both Tuesday and Wednesday. Clear skies are expected. A cloud or two could stream through, but ultimately very dry out there. We haven't had a whole lot of rain, and so with the dry vegetation, the breezy conditions we expect today, and humidity in the single digits to teens, we do have a critical fire threat. That's something to keep in mind. A red flag warning is in effect today until 9 p.m., which means that any new spark could really cause some problems, and any new fire that develops could really get out of control pretty quickly. So we do want to make sure that we have safe fire practices. You know, don't park your car in the tall, dry grass or drive through the dry grass. Tie up your chains. Make sure you're aware of where you throw your cigarette butts. We don't need any new fire starting. We already have a lot going on. Ultimately, we have a dry, hot day ahead of us with a cool down over the weekend with partly cloudy skies Friday through Sunday, and then things start to warm back up to kick off the next week. I'm ABC4 weather forecaster Seth Sanders. Have a great day.
On the phone with us with an update on the trails out there is Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony. Laura, good morning.
Good morning, Grace, and happy Thursday, Park City. It is so dry out there. We don't have a lot going on. Our crews are out there working up in the Bonanza Loop area, trying to finish a connection to the Bonanza and WOW trails, between the Bonanza and WOW trails. We've also got Rick reporting that Park City Mountain has completed the rerouting and rebuilding of Lower Jenny's Trail, so that's now open for use. Also that Deer Valley East Trails, so the East Village trails out of the Jordanelle area, are closed right now and probably for the rest of the year for snowmaking infrastructure the resort is doing. So it's a construction area. Just stay clear. We got 400 miles of trails. You don't need to be over there. Basin Rec is reporting that all of their pathways that had construction on them are now open again. And that's about it. I'm looking forward to some cooler temps, but boy, could we use some rain out there. It is moon dust city. So, be safe we'll hope to see you out there.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for the update. We've been speaking with...
Thanks, Grace.
Thanks, Laura. This is Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony. It's 8:10. You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. I'm Grace Dorfler, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. Well, we have got a full show ahead this morning. First up is Summit County Councilmember Tanya Hansen. She has a recap of last night's county council meeting. Next, Heber City PIO Ryan Bunnell will discuss the Heber Leadership Academy and how to apply. And Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang has a preview of upcoming screenings and the latest with Park City Film. Summit County, Heber City, and Park City Film are all financial supporters of KPCW. Will Summit County North Summit firefighters access bulletproof vests on the job? KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it is one of many new policies the department is adopting.
The Summit County Council has approved numerous new policies for the North Summit Fire District since it transitioned from a volunteer to a paid firefighting force 3 years ago. A policy regarding body armor was included in the batch approved this week. Councilmember Roger Armstrong, who formerly served on the district's administrative control board, says the policies provide a window into the day-to-day realities of firefighting.
It's really interesting to actually stop down and think about the kinds of calls you guys respond to in a situation as yours.
June 29th, a man in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, set a wildfire and ambushed the firefighters who responded. Two were fatally shot and a third was wounded. Armstrong told KPCW the body armor policy isn't specifically in response to the Coeur d'Alene shooting so much as the world we're living in today. The policy requires the fire district to make ballistic vests available if needed, but not for firefighters to wear them at all times. Other policies approved Wednesday address Utah workplace safety laws, contact with communicable diseases, use of district social media and devices, as well as communications in general. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone with us with an update on the Summit County Council is Councilmember Tanya Hansen. Tanya, good morning.
Good morning, Grace.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Well, there was a county council meeting last night. It was a bit of a late agenda. It feels like the time of year where maybe the pace is a little bit slower for county council. And you've advocated for a summer recess. What would be the benefits of that?
Oh, interesting question. Park City Council takes the month of July off, and because it's usually a light agenda in July, it just seemed like it might be something that we should consider doing also. A lot of people go on vacation. We have the upcoming fair. There just seems to be a lot going on. Now, if this happens or not, I don't know, but it was something for us to contemplate.
Okay, understood. And I mean, county services do operate year round. So I guess, why do you see that there's a slower pace in the summer for a lot of the government meetings, I guess?
Well, as I said, a lot of staff goes on vacation and kids are out of school. And, we are getting prepared for the upcoming budget meetings. It just seems to be a little lull this time of year.
Fair enough. Speaking of budget, could you give us any kind of update on what that budget process will look like for this year, if you have a timeline planned for setting next year's budget?
The budget is in the works. There are departments meeting and sending their information to those folks who put all the details together in the budget. My understanding is they'll start working like 8 hours a day meeting, going through the details of that budget starting August 11th. My guess is that's going to be coming to the council sometime mid-September, and we start working through it at that time. And then we, of course, approve it as early as we can, November or December.
Mm-hmm. Any public hearings, those kind of things come along the way?
I'm trying to recall if there's public hearings. Of course, the public can always show up and speak to us with their comments at 6 o'clock every Wednesday when we meet for anything that's not on the agenda or a land use application. So that's always an option for the public. We do have people report to us, like, you know, the seniors will come in and talk to us about their budget requests. Different folks who are advocating for their own budget will come in and speak to us at that time.
Okay. I know it's still pretty early in the process, but I guess with all of the federal uncertainty with different funding cuts or funding freezes, do you feel like that's going to show up a lot in the budget discussions as you move through the fall?
I don't know if it's going to show up a lot, but it will certainly be showing up, especially with our health department and the things that they advocate for and work on. I think we'll see that become a problem for them. I'm not sure about others, but it's very possible.
What are you hearing in terms of the latest from the health department about how they are going to be affected by funding cuts?
Things have kind of settled out a little bit, and maybe not as big of impacts as first thought. So that's a little bit of good news there. But, you know, frankly, I haven't seen any budget numbers. I'm not involved in those budget committees. I don't know a lot of that detail.
Okay. Well, we will certainly keep an eye on it as it moves closer to a county council vote. I'd love to talk a little bit about last night's meeting. There were a couple of public hearings on the agenda. I understand one of them was for driveway grades, which is a pretty common exception in Summit County. But staff didn't recommend granting this one. How'd the council vote last night?
Well, actually, staff in their initial report had some an error in their report of their information they had. They initially thought that this ask was due to a water line problem, and that was not the case. And to clarify, we typically do not approve special exceptions, because the problem with approving a special exception, once you approve it for one person, you've got to continue to approve it for everyone that asked for that same exception. So we are very cautious and critical of special exceptions. This one, however, was for White Pine Ranch's subdivision. It's on White Pine Lane, and it serves an access for 12 homes. And their proposed change was to install a gate and a gatehouse to keep people from trespassing and parking on a private road. We did approve this, but one of the main reasons we approved this exception is because of a safety issue. By changing and this special request, the intersection on West White Pine Lane, where it intersects into White Pine Canyon Road, becomes safer. Mm-hmm. And because of the county council, our first priority is the safety, health, and welfare of our constituents. Because it was a safety issue, we chose to grant this special exception.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for the update. What about the other public hearing? It seems like it was about amending some of the development code.
Yes. The proposal was to remove the final site plan requirements from the Eastern Summit County Development Code. Now, this has already happened in the Snyderville Basin Code. So, you know, it makes the two codes more consistent, first of all. And staff proposed to remove the requirements of the final site plans because they felt it was redundant. And final site plans must be recorded to construction prior to construction activity, and this could drag it out, a final site plan, for weeks or months to have to redo that site plan. So we chose to go ahead with the advice of staff, and also Eastern Summit County Planning Commission had approved this, so we agreed to go ahead with this change in the code.
Okay. Well, thank you for the update. I'd love to talk a little bit now about districting. That's been kind of a big topic for Summit County of late. Earlier in the week, there was a meeting of the Summit County mayors to kind of redraw the districts. Have you seen the districts that they forwarded you for approval?
They have not forwarded it for approval yet. So on Monday evening, the commission met and they voted unanimously to approve a map that was presented at that meeting. So we have not seen that map yet. What happens next steps are that the districting commission will submit that map to us, and it needs to be submitted prior to October 1st. And then the county council will have 30 days to review the map, to hold a public hearing, and to approve the map.
Okay. And are you required to vote yes on the map? Like, what happens if you vote no?
The state statute reads that the county council shall approve the map. Okay. So we are dictated to approve the map.
Not a lot of wiggle room there.
No. and you know, in my opinion, it's kind of crazy. We're going to have a public hearing, take public input, but there's nothing we can do with that input because we have to approve the map.
Oh, interesting. You kind of anticipated mm-hmm. my next question. Yeah. What? So, mm-hmm. what should residents just feel like their public comments are worth
you.
Anything?
Well, I don't know about that. I would say public comments are always worth something. It's always interesting to hear what the public has to say. But, you know, if the public's coming forward and they hate the map and they want us to change it, well, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of latitude there.
Huh. Yeah, it's an unusual situation for sure. What kind of comments have you heard from constituents
yes.
so far?
Oh, it runs the gamut. Some people are really, really upset about the whole redistricting idea. I live on the east side of the county. People on the east side of the county have been advocating for redistricting for years. So, you know, it just really runs the gamut. So we're following state law and moving forward as directed.
Understood. It has been controversial. Has it affected your relationships with the East Side mayors at all?
It has. I've been very disappointed in the behavior of the East Side mayors. The letter they wrote to leadership was something I didn't appreciate. You know, people do what they think is necessary, but, you know, communication is always the first line of defense, in my opinion, and nothing was communicated, so it's been a little bit challenging.
Yeah. And what about your neighbors to the south in Wasatch County? They haven't taken any steps toward redistricting. They say they're holding out for a special session. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, Wasatch County was told that they didn't need to do anything with the redistricting because this law was not them. So they have taken that advice and have not done anything. We will see what happens in the special session.
I guess we will. Yeah. On a lighter note, I saw that you had some guests from the Summit County Fair.
Yeah, please.
I saw you had some guests from the fair at last night's county council meeting. Have you made it over to the rodeo yet or any of the other fair events?
I'm close to the fairgrounds, so I can sit on my back deck and listen to everything that's going on. So
lucky
that
you.
Makes it real easy for me to attend the fair. But yes, yesterday we had all the queens come in, the royalty of the fair, which is always great to meet them. And they're beautiful, delightful, fun young ladies. So that's always fun. There's a lot of activities happening at the Summit County Fairgrounds this week. It started last Saturday night with the Demo Derby, which is always sells out in this big event. There has been a little buckaroo rodeo, as well as the livestock and home goods judging has been happening all week. Tonight, Friday night, and Saturday night, there is a sanctioned PCRA rodeo with some of the top bucking stock and cowboys from around the country. And if you don't know what PCRA is, it's the Professional Cowboys Rodeo Association, where the top cowboys in the country belong to that association. They accumulate points for all the rodeos they attend, and that's what qualifies them to go to the National Finals Rodeo that happens in December in Las Vegas. So we will have, you know, some of the top cowboys from around the country.
Awesome.
And then while I'm on the subject, Friday at noon is the senior lunch that's being served under the large tent in the fairgrounds, and all Summit County seniors are welcome to attend that event. And then Saturday is the parade at 10 a.m. on Colville Main Street, followed by the 4-H livestock sale Saturday afternoon. Now, this 4-H livestock sale is a great event for the youth. They take animals, lambs, steers, or sheep. They raise them and take care of these animals, and then they sell them during this livestock sell. So if folks are out there looking to fill their freezer for the upcoming winter with beef, pork, or lamb, this is a great opportunity to purchase that animal and support the 4-H youth of our county. So that's a lot in a nutshell that's going on. Of course, there's a carnival going on, food trucks. If folks haven't attended or they have, it's a great event, and it's just, you know, a good hometown feeling to it. And I would tell people they should check it out.
Awesome. A few more nights to do that. Well, Tanya, thank you so much for all of these updates. Is there anything else you'd like to add before I let you go?
No, I think we've pretty much covered everything. Thank you, Grace.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time.
All right. Enjoy your day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. We've been speaking with Summit County Council member Tanya Hansen. Applications are open now for the 4th Leadership Academy class, as I understand it. Let's start by hearing a little bit about why Heber City decided to create this program. Is it modeled after Leadership Park City?
You know, I was involved in forming Heber Leadership Academy
We definitely did some due diligence. I don't recall using the Park City Leadership Group as an exact duplicate. Excuse me. We did, within Heber City, we had noticed a trend, though, that I think that the citizenship was a little disconnected from the governmental process. And that was the need. That was the void we were trying to fill. We believed that if we were able to perhaps help some of the citizens understand what their municipality does for them better, then there would be greater satisfaction amongst the community with that clarity. So that was how we started the idea of creating the Heber Leadership Academy.
So it's really a deep dive into everything that goes into running a city, everything that goes into, you know, making government happen on a daily basis. Is that kind of what's included?
That's the overview. I was getting some feedback at the time, and it was clear that the boundaries between, like, federal, state, county, municipal, they were being blurred in a lot of citizens' eyes. And the city was receiving complaints for things that were county or state, sometimes even federal policies, and people being upset about those policies and coming to the municipality, which, of course, the municipality has no say in what federal policy is. So we did notice that there were some other similar type products in other communities, and thought this might be a great idea just to do some outreach. There's also another variable, which being that we are in an election cycle right now, going through the Heber Leadership Academy would help someone who is interested in becoming involved in local politics to understand all of the different facets that they would be working with as a council member. I think that occasionally people may become elected, they may run and then become elected and then not truly understand the scope of everything that's going on. Maybe you have your pet project like trails and parks or you know, development or one of those things that are important to you, but then once you have the seat, you realize, whoa, there's a whole lot going on here that I had no idea about. So the curriculum of the Leadership Academy, it goes through just the different parts of the community. You know, you have all of the different departments within a municipality, like, you know, there's the planning department. And that, you know, with Heber City, there's both a community development and more of a planning proper. What are the differences there? How is that different from the building department or the engineering department? You know, and you know, how does the police department relate to the municipality? What are the relationships between fire, EMS, hospital? And, you know, how does it all work? And that's the way the curriculum is broken up. We have, I believe it's 9 sessions in our particular Leadership Academy, and each one of those, it meets once a month. Each one of those meetings would include one of those aspects of how a community is run.
Okay. And it looks like the application deadline is just around the corner, August 18th. What's required to apply?
There is a fee. The fee mainly goes to food provided. But you just need to fill out the application, pay the fee, and you're off and running. The decisions are made by committee, like everything else in the public sector, you know. So the applications are reviewed, and then invitations will be issued at that point.
Cool. So, and how many people do you typically have in a class?
It's typically a couple dozen. And it'll be a mix of citizens, a mix of city employees, city leaders. We really encourage that everybody within Heber City Municipal go through the program as well. I think we set a goal that all staff should have cycled through a Leadership Academy class within 6 years of launch.
Okay.
So that was our goal. And that also, let's say that you have a job in you know, in the admin office working with accounting. We believe that your job satisfaction might be better if you understood more clearly what all of the different departments are doing across the company. So if everybody's more informed, then hopefully as we move forward with, you know, policy decisions or things that shape the community more directly, we have a more informed citizenship that's approaching us to help provide that feedback on how they would like to see the community led.
Okay. And one of the cool things about the program, or one of its hallmarks, I guess, is the class project that the class puts together every year. Could you tell me a little bit about what the projects have been like so far?
Yes, and to the alumnus that I've spoken with, the class project is the highlight of most of their experiences. They, as a group, decide democratically what their topic will be. And then, you know, each Leadership Academy meeting is a couple hours, and, you know, you'll have a, there'll be a speaker that comes in, talks about a topic, and then they'll have their keynote, which would be, you know, one of the departments that we discussed just moments ago. But then you'll also have a block to discuss your class project. This is the big takeaway, and you know, a lot of times we invest our time and you want to see something on the backside of it, and that's what these class projects are. Some examples of projects that have been created in the Hebrew Leadership Academy that exist today. One of the first ones was the design for the water feature outside of our city building called now Compass Plaza. excuse me. Another one in recent years has been the Flip the Strip project, which was done out in front of our police department, where the principles of xeriscaping and how to do water-wise irrigation were displayed for the city. Another one would have been the landscaping at Compass Plaza. That was one of their projects. Most recently, last year's graduating class went through, inventoried, audited, and created content for a downtown historic walk, identifying and memorializing some of the historic properties in downtown Heber. The fruits of that are all just coming to play now. There are placards that are out in front of these houses. Probably within a week or so, all of that information will also be available online on heberut.gov. So, you know, as you graduate from the project, hopefully you can look back and see that you did something. What's also neat about this is the Hebrew Leadership Academy class will have to go in front of council, create a proposal, book a time, you know, and go and do council presentations to get approval for their project. So in the act of doing their project, they start to understand how you get things accomplished within a city council and a municipality. All in all, just a fantastic experience. So if you come out of the backside as a Hebrew Leadership Academy graduate, you should be not only informed of what the municipality does, but should you want to get council to move forward on a particular project or idea that is your own, how do you do it? And with that class project, they get that variable of being able to walk an idea through from concept to policy within a municipality.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And it seems like what I hear is that's kind of also bearing fruit in terms of who's running for office. I hear some of the leadership class alumni are now running for city council.
That is one of our hopes. That was one of the hopes in the beginning. We do have a sitting council member right now that was an alumnus. That's council member Cheatwood. Mm-hmm. So he, before he ran for office, did the Hebrew Leadership Academy and then ran after he graduated. You know, I think that's I've personally not run for office before, but I've gotten to see a lot of people that have. And there is always that moment after you're elected where you go, oh man, what do I do now? And I think that if you have gone through the Leadership Academy, you're going to have a better idea of what those expectations are when you're in that seat. And I think for anybody running for office, I would recommend it just without question. You should be a Hebrew Leadership Academy alumnus if you run for office, because your knowledge on day one will be greater than if you go into a cold.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to learn when you first fill that council seat. While we're on the topic of elections, one of the things that this year's Leadership Academy class will be tasked with is hosting a candidate forum. Could you tell us a little bit about that event?
We've done it for a couple of years now. Also, on the same principle that we were just speaking of, if you are on the other side of the lens, so to speak, and you're helping the candidates get through their forum, creating the interview questions, monitoring the debate itself, you're an active part of this process. And I think that you will be more equipped if you are the one running for office to do debates and interviews if you've had that experience with the Leadership Academy. So I think it's entirely relevant. There are several different candidate forums that are put out there. There's a lot of different options. I don't think we really were looking at the forum that the Leadership Academy does to be a competitive entity. I think our vision is more internal. But we do broadcast it out there. I think that they do a great job. I think that our dates are typically a little closer to the election final itself. So I think it's pretty well viewed and pretty well attended. It's definitely another one of the highlights of the program is that you get to be on the crew and you get to set up this debate and help all the candidates work through that debate. And there will be a couple in the group that volunteer to be the moderators. Just a really cool experience.
Yeah, and it sounds like one of the participants will kind of hit the ground running. As soon as they get chosen, it'll be one of the first things they start planning this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So classes start in end of August, and that, I believe their debate is in October for their goal for October. So, yeah, you'll hit the ground running, and you'll be right into the election cycle. We'll, of course, have primary results by then, so it'll be a little more targeted. Mm-hmm. It's just a super opportunity for the community to, at a grassroots level, to start to become involved in their local government.
Nice. I feel like we've talked a lot about politics and how people who might be thinking of running for office would find this a good fit. What about people who don't have political ambitions? Is there plenty there for them to enjoy as well?
Well, I think part of being a citizen is understanding how your government works. This is my opinion, but if we all are going to, pay an allotment of taxes, we all participate in these services. Back to the point that I made in the beginning of our discussion, that when people become upset about a particular topic, you need to know what the roles of public works are, or why. I recently heard a big discussion about impact fees. Why? Where do those fees go? What is even the point of an impact fee? These are the sorts of questions that would be answered from just a citizen standpoint. So if you don't understand, I think it's really easy to go to the conspiracy places, bitterness, because you don't understand how funds collected are being applied. If you, as a normal citizen, went through the Hebrew Leadership Academy, you would come out understanding, what is Hebrew Light and Power's relationship to the municipality and how does that affect the services that are provided to me? What is the relationship of the hospital? There are so many different areas where you can look at like a property tax breakdown sheet and understand what those fees mean. So then when you say, I have an opinion about that, that opinion isn't just based off of whim or, something that might not be entirely accurate. You have a greater understanding of how the machine is working. And really, there are a lot of different variables that go into running a municipality. It's stunning. So I think that your satisfaction as a citizen and your ability to become civically involved in a good way really, really amplify if you take the time to educate yourself about how the process works. Mm-hmm. So that would be my incentive to anybody that has no ambition to have an elected seat but just wants to be more in touch with their community. Knowledge is powerful, and I think that if you understand how your government is working, you're less likely to go into these places of anger and resentment. And then if you do have a question or an observation, the proper channels of how it will be addressed respectfully. So I think it's a fantastic program. And, you know, as a citizen myself, I believe in being involved. I feel like you don't have the right to fully complain. Well, I mean, you have the right. But for myself, I don't want to go and stand up there and complain only to find out that what I was talking about was actually a state issue. You know, or not related at all, right? You know, I like to come if I have an observation and personally and feel educated about what I'm getting ready to present. So, to all citizens, I would just really encourage it, because, you know, some of the anger that circulates about government would really be dispelled if you could understand it. Furthermore, if there was something that needed a course correction, you understand the channels, how it works, who to talk to. And you may be able to come to council with an implementable solution, as opposed to a statement that's saying, I'm just upset.
Right.
So an implementable solution is far more actionable than just a, I'm angry. So that to me would be the key point for any of the citizens is you become a citizen as opposed to just a passive taxpayer.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for the information, Ryan. We're going to have to leave it there, but can people go to the Heber website to learn more?
Absolutely. We still have some spots open for this year's Leadership Academy. Should you want to apply, go to envisionheber.com. On the primary navigation, there's a tab that says News, and right on that dropdown, there's one that says HLA. And on that, you can see our old class projects, the alumnus, a registration and a brief overview of what the calendar is, what the commitment is. So that's envisionheber.com/news/HLA.
Wonderful. Well, Ryan, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Grace. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We've been speaking with Heber City spokesperson Ryan Bunnell. On the phone with us now is Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang. She has an update on some screenings ahead. Katie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. It's a busy few weeks ahead for Park City Film. I'd love to hear a little bit about the film screening happening tonight. First of all, it's called Sabbath Queen. What's it about?
So we're wrapping up our summer screenings. And tonight, as you mentioned, we've got Sabbath Queen, which we are thrilled about. We're hosting director Sandy Dubowski and his award-winning film, Sabbath Queen. And this documentary was filmed over 21 years and follows the epic journey of Rabbi Amichai Lau-Lévi, who's torn between rejecting and embracing his Orthodox Jewish heritage. So kind of along the journey, he becomes a drag queen rebel, a bio queen dad, the founder of Lab Shul, which is a God-optional congregation, and then ultimately an Orthodox rabbi with the hope of creating change from within. Amichai's lifelong quest interrogates what Jewish survival looks like in the 21st century and what it means to creatively and radically reinvent religion and ritual. It is, you know, just a breathtaking film. It is everything that you love, or, you know, I love, and certainly our community loves about independent films. It's fresh off the film festival circuits. And we'll have director Sandy Dubowski, who was last year in 2001 with his film Trembling Before God at the Sundance Film Festival. He'll be here in person for Q&A after the film. This is part of our Raising Voices film series, and we have tickets available at parkcityfilm.org, and showtime is at 7 o'clock. So we're super excited to be back in the Santee, so inside in that amazing theater with just incredible film. We've got another film coming up next week, which is also inside the Santee, that was premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, called Speak. This premiered at the 2025 Sundance Film Festival. And this is a documentary about competitive speech. And it's following five of the country's top teenage speech competitors as they attempt to gain admission to, and for some to win, the National Speech and Debate Association Championships. They're all completely competing in original oratory, which are 10-minute speeches that are meant to inform or persuade based on topics the students have done research on and are really passionate about, which makes a huge difference as you're listening to them give their presentations. And the film follows the students as they prepare for the competition, as well as delves into how speech has impacted their lives. Their topics range everything from suicide to disability to school shootings to the weaponization of nostalgia. Not light topics, but the way that they present them is unbelievably hopeful, which is incredible to see, just the artistry that they bring to the competition. And these are just truly amazing individuals. They just beautifully illustrate the power of the spoken word and the importance of really seeing and understanding people at a human level, which to me is the best part about indie films. We'll have a post-film discussion with co-director Guy Mossman and film participants Umfaz Muhammad Ali and Sam Schaefer. And then Greg Davidson from Park City Toastmasters will be our moderator. This film is also part of our Raising Voices film series. So I want to thank Park City Municipal and Park City Chamber for supporting both Sabbath Clean tonight and then Speak next week on Wednesday. Admission to Speak is free, but Sabbath Clean is a ticketed event. So just a little difference there on those two films.
Okay, so a couple of really neat documentaries ahead. Could you remind our listeners what the Raising Voices series is?
So Raising Voices is a series that we created to showcase and celebrate communities and cultures that have historically been underrepresented in the arts. It's something that we always kind of think about as we're doing our programming, you know, across the season, but we felt it was important. About 3 years ago, we created this series to really be very intentional and to communicate that to our audiences, that this is what we're thinking about as we brought in Sabbath Queen, certainly, you know, a very small, but very, you know, important community. You know, and then for Speak, that, you know, that the students themselves are, have diverse backgrounds, but also the topics that they choose to address. You know, often they're from, you know, communities that are quite conservative, and the only way that they can express their unique identities, whether they're gay, whether they're Muslim, you know, whether they're an immigrant, is through these speech competitions. And so it's really powerful to see how they've learned to express themselves and how we as an audience can connect with their stories, whether it's something that reflects something in our own history or, you know, present identity, or it's something that we are learning fresh, right? That's something new to us. Mm-hmm. And again, that's kind of the beauty for me of independent cinema, but certainly with this series, we wanted to make sure that, you know, that it was kind of an intentional focus, and that when people come in, that they have that mindset of like, okay, this is something that I can celebrate and some, perhaps something I'm going to learn, or a place where I can feel seen and represented.
Lovely. Yeah. Some windows or some mirrors. What else do you have in terms of films coming up this month? I know it's not just documentaries.
No, not just docs. And so then we go outside, a little lighter touch on those. So on Friday, we'll be back outside at the Park City Library patio on August 8th. And we're showing Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, where Puss is down to the last of his 9 lives and must find the magic wishing star to replenish his supply. The film will be shown in Spanish with English subtitles. This is part of our Cine en Español series. Showtime is 8:45, so basically dusk, and admission and popcorn are free. And we're working with Park City Library and Basin Rec on the outdoor patio series, and that's the last one for the summer. And then next week on Friday, August 15th, you can head on over to Camas City Park for The Wild Robot, which is one of my favorite films of the year. This is based on the New York Times best-selling book about a shipwrecked robot that becomes the adoptive parent of an orphaned gosling. It is breathtaking. I love this film. Definitely for film lovers of all ages. We'll have free food trucks from 5 to 7 p.m. The film will start at 7. We're using an LED screen so we can start before dark. Bring a blanket, low back chair, kind of, you know, the rules of outdoor concerts and films, so people can see behind you. But we're working with Summit County Health on this presentation, and admission is free for that. So you can go to parkcityfilm.org to see all of those films. The only ticketed event will be for Sabbath Queen tonight. The other film screenings are all free. Registration is never required for any of our films, but certainly we do request that people do it in advance if they have the opportunity. That helps us know who's coming and helps us prepare a little better with our popcorn, make sure we don't run out.
Fair enough. I want to talk a little bit about Park City Film a little bit more broadly. Since a few weeks ago, you got the green light from the city council to increase the number of screenings you do every year. Is that already starting, or when do you plan to start ramping up to that 200 films a year plan?
So we start our regular season, kind of our regular weekend season, on September 5th, so the weekend after Labor Day, as we always do. I'm just headed out to the Telluride Film Festival and the Toronto Film Festival at the end of this month. So that'll kind of, that's part of the plan in terms of curating films. I mean, certainly I've seen a lot of films at Sundance and throughout the year. But yeah, no, we're actively looking at the fall schedule and how do we fit in those extra screenings. And it's not just, you know, as simple as adding more events, right? Adding more films onto the screen, but we're really looking at it intentionally. If the idea is to fill that cultural void that we left when Sundance departs, which it is. You know, it's things like Sabbath Queen, where you have the director coming in and speaking about the film and telling you about, you know, his journey to make this film. I mean, 21 years is a long time to be working on a film, bringing local filmmakers together to showcase their work and connecting audiences with them. So it's there's a lot of moving parts in it in terms of what that full program will look like. And certainly it will encompass next summer, which we're already working on, putting together a much larger schedule, certainly, than we had, you know, this past year and in years previous, but really filling out a full schedule there. So no, yeah, we're actively working on it. We've had an amazing amount of people reach out who were filmmakers or, you know, have connections with the industry. And it's been amazing and very affirming to get that support. People say, how can we help? How can we be part of this? We're so excited to see Park City Films stepping up because our community loves independent cinema. I mean, that's why we were created 31 years ago. So it's an honor to be able to continue to carry that mission forward, but also have the opportunity now to amplify it. I mean, we're of course sad about Sundance departing, but you know, change can bring opportunity. So here we are.
Yeah. And on that note, you've shared a little bit about some of the events that Park City Film has held that have been successful, like the Studio Ghibli screenings recently. What other kinds of new events would you hope to bring in as you're thinking intentionally about this new programming?
I mean, it's kind of a mix. You know, we're certainly doing more. I mean, part of our mission, because we are the only place to see independent cinema in the Wasatch Back, you know, we continue to do some screenings outside like we do in Eastern Summit County. We're looking next year at potentially doing some screenings in City Park. So changing up, not just doing things in the Santee, but other places. But then also curating, as we did with the Studio Ghibli Film Festival, kind of thematically. So bringing in either repertory films like we did with the Miyazaki films, or bringing in, say, if you know, have kind of curate a selection of films that are documentaries but are around specific themes. So I can't give you details in terms of what exactly that will look like, because part of what people, I think, appreciate about and come to Park City Film for are the new films, right? What's coming out now. And so as these films are coming out of the film festival circuit, it's, you know, kind of in the moment of what's coming up. And that's why it's so important to go to these festivals, is to see what's resonating with audiences and then kind of what themes are emerging. I mean, I was just at the Art House Convergence, which is a conference for art house cinemas like we are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really what people were saying, it's like that, you know, what does it mean to be human? Like, what are these stories? How do these stories resonate? How do these stories connect us? I mean, that is what independent cinema and what independent art houses do. And so, you know, trying to be of the moment, but also kind of larger than that is really, as I'm looking at these themes, you know, the types of films that we're bringing in. So, you know, more to come in terms of announcements about what those themes will look like, but really being intentional about that. What's going to resonate with our community, but also, you know, illustrate to folks that we are part of a larger conversation, and what are those conversations that we can amplify and connect to and, you know, bring to our community that either are new or something that we're already kind of talking about, it's bubbling up, we can amplify a little bit more and probably reinforce through some of these film screenings.
Wonderful. Well, lots to follow as you guys continue to expand and offer these screenings to the community. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention quickly, which I'd forgotten, so sorry to interrupt you. We have our audience survey. It's a national survey of all art house cinemas across the country. We're a part of that, so we're launching that today. It's open until September 7th, so please, please, please go on our social media page, Facebook, Instagram. We're sending out an email today. Fill out the survey. Let us know what you love. Let us know what you'd like to see. We always love compliments. We also, you know, we appreciate critiques and, you know, recommendations. Like, we need to hear from the community about what works for them and what doesn't, honestly, and, you know, what else we can do. How can we improve what we do so that it's, you know, it's a partnership where we want to do this. We're doing this for the community and with the community. So please fill out the audience survey. That's launching today. ParkCityFilm.org for more information about our films. And please join us for Night to Sabbath Queen. It is honestly just, I mean, such a unique film and one of the best documentaries I've seen this year. Say, between Sabbath Queen and Speak, I can't tell you which one is like my favorite, but they're both, you know, they bubble to the top in terms of the films that I've seen this year. They will just take your breath away and, you know, connect you to a larger community in ways that you probably had not thought that you could. So ParkCityFilm.org, we'd love to see at the movies.
Wonderful. Well, Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang.